Winemaker Casa Vinicola Zone in USA has just announced that it will donate a portion of its proceeds this fall to the American Cancer Society to mark Breast Cancer Awareness Month. The company will donate $1 for each bottle of sparkling rosé wine sold in September and October. The American Cancer Society spends about $130 million each year on cancer research, and cancer foundations like it receive a significant portion of their donations from companies that sell pink-colored or pink-ribboned products for breast cancer research. These days, pink ribbons seem to festoon an endless array of consumer goods, from water bottles to handguns. Each year, hundreds of thousands of women and men run or walk in races sponsored by corporations and large nonprofits like the Susan G. Komen Foundation to raise awareness of and money for breast cancer research. The events are festive and filled with upbeat messaging. But is pink ribbon fundraising an effective strategy to end breast cancer? Some analysts accuse companies like Zone & Wine of using breast cancer fundraising as a marketing tool to sell their products. Critics of the so-called pinkwashing contend that only a small portion of the profits from pink products actually funds breast cancer research. In fact, very little new information has resulted from the well-funded research. Moreover, research aimed at curing breast cancer far outweighs the investigations of the disease's causes and prevention. A new documentary film, Pink Ribbons, Inc., investigates corporate pinkwashing and breast cancer awareness campaigns. The film examines how funds raised for the cause are spent and takes a critical look at today's corporate-influenced breast cancer culture that emphasizes hope, survivors, and the color pink, what author Samantha King calls the tyranny of cheerfulness. Director Leah Poole interviews experts, including Barbara Ehrenreich and Dr. Susan Love, as well as leaders of the pink ribbon campaigns like Nancy Goodman Brinker, CEO of Susan G. Komen for the Cure. My guest is Ravida Din. She is the executive producer of Pink Ribbons, Inc. Welcome to Uprising, Ravida.
Hello. Nice to be with you.
Thanks so much for joining us. Well, first, before we get into the campaigns as they are today, can you tell our listeners a little bit of the history of how, under Reagan, the government de-emphasized the government's own responsibility on finding either a cure or just researching breast cancer and its causes to encouraging corporations to take the lead?
Well, this history was actually something that I found probably the most fascinating in the research, and it's something that I first read about in Samantha King's book, Pink Ribbons, Inc., on which the film is based. And she talked about a shift that took place in the early 90s where we saw Reagan specifically in the States and to some extent Thatcher in the UK, where they really encouraged corporations to become involved around the social welfare of citizens. So what you actually saw government encouraging was corporations to get more involved in social services, while at the same time governments cut back their own resources. So there were massive cuts in those early 90s. And what you started to see was a blurring of corporate and government interests. As government moved to a distance, corporations were invited to become good citizens. And the way to become good citizens was to become involved in solving some of the social issues in society. And of course, for corporations, that meant, you know, to present themselves as generous citizens, it was to raise money, to encourage the public to become a part of the citizen philanthropy. And from there, we really saw the shift from politics to charity starting to take place. And it was a real cultural transformation that led to a very savvy practice today known as strategic philanthropy.
Well, the film has a lot of archival footage of past actions around cancer in the 90s, where activists would hold militant marches demanding more investigation into the causes of cancer and on cancer prevention. We don't see these marches today very much, do we?
No, and for me, the historical context was really critical for this film, because what I really wanted to do with the film and wanted audiences to understand is that where we are today in terms of this culture around breast cancer that Barbara Ehrenreich, you know, calls the cult of pink kits, didn't just emerge out of nowhere, that there, in fact, has been a very long and a very important history of activism around women's health that really began with the women's movement. And it was about women. Yes, some of it was marching on the streets and demanding real social change, and some of it was work that was just tirelessly done by individual women to demand better outcomes and access for women around health issues. So I wanted to just remind people that there's a history here, and in fact that work continues, but it's become overshadowed by this very sort of pop culture that we've now created around breast cancer.
Well, one thing that really struck me was Charlotte Haley, who was the woman who first started the whole concept of these ribbons. I think her original ribbon for breast cancer was most salmon-colored, and her message was about prevention, not cures. And the Susan Komen Foundation essentially decided that they wanted to co-opt that whole message, and they turned it into a pink ribbon campaign. And now they're seen everywhere, including on handguns, as I mentioned. I want to turn back to the issue that you brought up about what Ehrenreich points out. She herself is somebody who has had breast cancer. And I want to play a clip for our listeners from the documentary Pink Ribbons, Inc. My guest is the executive producer, Ravita Din. In this clip, we hear not only Barbara Ehrenreich, but Dr. Samantha King, on whose book the film is based.
There may be more a pressure on breast cancer patients to be positive simply because there's more pressure on women in general to be smiling and helpful and perky and cheerful at all times.
What I found in my research is that many women actually feel alienated by the overly optimistic approach. They feel like they can't have their feelings of anger or despair or hopelessness and feel like a legitimate person with breast cancer, that in order to be a survivor, you must maintain this optimistic outlook and participate in what I call the tyranny of cheerfulness.
Well, this particular clip refers to a lot of what the film delves into, which is that many of these race for the cure, these walk for the cure campaigns sponsored by Avon, by Revlon, and of course the Susan G. Komen Foundation are extremely upbeat. There's a lot of stay positive. Of course, the color pink, you know, it's very festive. There's a lot of upbeat music. What's wrong with that?
Well, I think that it helps some women, and there's nothing wrong with that. You know, my argument, and certainly in the clip that you played with Barbara Ehrenreich and Samantha King, is that it's not the only experience. And unfortunately, I think what we've done with these large-scale corporate events is promoted and sold to the public one image around this disease. And what it's done is it's normalized it. And by doing that, it's completely depoliticized it. And for me, that didn't speak to my experience. When I first read Barbara Ehrenreich's article, it was the first time that I was reading something that actually spoke to my own personal experience with this disease. And there is room for being upset. There's room for being angry. You know, that's how change happens. It doesn't just happen in a climate of where the disease is normalized. I mean, one of the events that really astounded me was the Revlon walk in New York. You know, they don't even mention the word cancer anywhere.
Wow.
I was at the race in Washington for that Susan G. Komen does every year, and it was hard for me walking through their market area where all the products are being pushed to find any information that spoke specifically to treatment, to prevention, certainly nothing on prevention, or even looked, you know, critically at any of the outcomes in terms of the massive clinical trials that go on all the time. So there's a complete removal of any kind of link to the fact that, you know, women are still dying from this disease.
And what has come from all the research? Billions have been spent. So the Susan G. Komen Foundation has raised over $1 billion. Where is it going? And is any of it being spent on actually trying to understand the disease and understand its cause and what it might actually, you know, be linked to, why women get it rather than curing it? And can it even be cured if you don't know the cause?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the point that the film certainly makes. We found it extremely challenging in our research to really dissect and find out how money is spent. What we did find is that a lot of money goes to research because people want to fund research, but there's massive duplication. You know, in other words, you could have labs in different parts of the world all doing the same research over and over again, so very little coordination, repetition, and obviously gaps. We also found that in general, about 15% of funds raised in most places is spent on looking at prevention, and off that, only 5% looks at environmental links. What some of the experts said, who we spoke with, who are very involved in research, say that there's actually no incentive for what is an industry-managed disease to actually look at prevention. It's far more profitable to keep the focus on treatment.
And yet these corporations that slap a pink ribbon onto every product they can to sell it also claim that they're giving money to research. But when your film investigated it, you found that many of them don't actually give that much money. There was the American Express story. For every purchase that somebody made with an Amex card between certain dates and only in certain companies, Amex would donate one penny to research, no matter what the amount was that was spent.
Yeah, and most companies will cap the proceeds too. So, you know, sometimes you don't see the fine print. So,
do they spend more on actually marketing their campaigns than on even donating?
I don't know the answer specifically to that, but what I do know in speaking with, for example, Carol Cohn, who's a cause marketing expert, the value that they get in terms of if they had to spend the same amount on advertising and reaching consumers far outweighs the cost to them. So it's extremely beneficial to them to align themselves to the cause, because what they've also found is if consumers have a choice between buying, you know, pink toilet paper and white toilet paper, they'll pick up the pink one because they'll think they're doing something good.
In the film also is a story of how NFL players who were in trouble with the law realized that women made a big percentage of their viewership, and so the NFL adopted a major pink ribbon campaign to soften the image of these of these players. Finally, let's also talk about how many of the products that have these pink ribbon campaigns, these corporations like Avon, Estee Lauder, for example, they're hawking products that have ingredients that are linked to cancer causes, aren't they?
Yeah, I think this was probably the most startling and maybe insidious part of the research that we were doing. And, you know, there's only so much that you can get into in a film, so I think we only touched the tip of the iceberg. But you have companies like Ford, you know, that have given millions of dollars in their partnership with Coleman and probably other cancer groups. And at the same time, we know that there is scientific evidence in terms of the link between polycyclic hydrocarbons, you know, which are a class of chemicals that create fossil fuels that are linked to breast cancer. There's a whole example we give around the use of RGBH in milk products that's linked. We have, you know, AstraZeneca, leading pharmaceutical company that actually was involved, that creates atrazine, a very, very common pesticide that has links to cancer. The cosmetic companies, we have huge numbers of cosmetic companies that are dedicated to the cause, but many haven't signed a campaign for safe cosmetics, which means they don't disclose the ingredients.
And yet they raise money for the breast cancer research. Well, Ravita Din, I want to thank you very much for joining us today. Is there a website for the film?
People should go to First Run Features, which is our American distributor for the film, and they'll find all the details there. You can also go to nfb.ca and look up Pink Ribbons, Inc.
And we'll post that on our website. Ravita Din, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you for inviting me.
Ravita Din is the executive producer of Pink Ribbons, Inc., which is showing at the Long Beach Art Theater on July 1st and then also opens in San Diego at the Landmark Ken on June 22nd. For Sonali, Subversive Thought for the Day, Eric Schlosser, author of Fast Food Nation, said the history of the 20th century was dominated by the struggle against totalitarian systems of state power. The 21st will no doubt be marked by a struggle to curtail excessive corporate power.